Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I thought, given the quality of the two games and the talking points within, we should run a mini means test, an Anzac means test. I haven't cleared this with Kingy, but I've got Nathan Buckley in the studio. The means test is for Jamieson. Win a limited edition Jamieson Sherrin match ball. Head to your local bottle shop to enter. Bucks, hello.
How are you, Jared? There's a demarcation dispute. I think I'm expecting to hear from Kingy any moment now.
I feel like possession's 9/10 of the law and decisions are made by those that show up. I'm here. It's my show. We're doing the means test.
Yeah, no, I'm up for it. Let's go.
We usually start with a King's Gambit, but that is his. Yours is the buck stops here. So give me an opening buck stops here from Anzac Day.
I've actually got two. So the first is, you don't need heavy scoring for it to be a great game of footy. I was sitting there at Fox. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get to the game. We did couch off the back of the game. So I was in the studio. And I just thought the first half was riveting. I was so impressed with what Essendon did. But I remarked to myself, because I was sitting there. I was sitting there with Jace Dunstall, Lee Montagna, because they were doing the game. And Sarah Jones. And I just, how good is this game of footy? It's an awesome game of footy. And it was like 4-3, and then it was 5-3, and then they get a couple of 5-5 each at halftime, 35 points apiece. And it was a riveting, brilliant game of football in all its glory. Ball use, pressure, defence, you know, Darcy Moore taking marks down back, Essendon, you know, making the ground big and moving the ball really well. So I just thought, how good was that? And obviously the end point, the second half, went to another level again. The second point that I would make is how powerful a moment it was when Braden Maynard, early in the second half, made a blue from a kick out, went straight to an Essendon player goal. The way that he, his defensive teammates, and everyone on the bench at Collingwood, which is what came across in the broadcast, handled that moment. And it was just like, look, we can't do anything about that. You just have to laugh at how calamitous that was. We can't go back. It's done now. And Bruzzy's like, hand up, my bad. Like, that's all you want. Great, successful people and successful organisations, they take responsibility and accountability for their failings and their shortcomings, and then they just move on to the next. And that's exactly what they did. And it was brilliant the way that both Braden Maynard, because he didn't take that moment into the next. So you can, and I think that's that high performers, they don't take their bad, they don't take the negatives into the next moment. They don't turn a bad moment into a bad 5 minutes or a bad 10 minutes. And the other thing they do is they don't take the successes of now and expect that just to happen in the next 5 or 10. They keep getting back to work. So they let that good moment go as well, take the positive momentum with it, but then they still understand that you need to put your nose to the grindstone. So I thought that moment in itself was reflective of the attitude that Collingwood play with or that great teams display.
The buck stops here, gets us underway in this Anzac means test. The big issue is Collingwood. No lead is safe from Collingwood now. Self-fulfilling prophecy. That's how it felt. Late in the third quarter, you're starting to run the numbers. And when Draper taps the ball out the side to Stringer, you're right, 28 points. Like, that's a proper mountain. But the Collingwood crowd sensed it heading into the last quarter. They clearly drew on their experiences from the past. As soon as they kicked the first goal, and you knew that Essendon were going to just grimly defend through the last quarter, you could have had a reasonable stab at 7-0 5 minutes into the last quarter.
Before the first goal was
scored.
I reckon before the first goal was scored.
The environment, it was amazing.
There was a tactical shift, though, that made a big difference. And it was difficult to pick up at the time, but it was really clear. John Noble dumps a ball to about 53 metres out to Jamie Elliott. This was before the first goal, and there was the hand signals of slow and calm. Now, so you've got a player that's just received the ball at 53 metres out from goal, and I think the message was, let's wait until we can get right up the field and make this part of the ground as congested as we possibly can. So it's the antithesis of what we think good offense is. But Essendon had effectively made the ground big, and they've played the biggest games in terms of high transition because they don't actually defend ball movement that well, but they've moved the ball as well as any team in the first five or six rounds. And that actually had them to the lead that they enjoyed at three-quarter time. In the first and third quarters in particular, they'd made the ground really big and had it their way. I think Collingwood decided that they were, one, they had to win clearance, and Nick Dacos goes in, still side bottom goes in, makes an enormous difference to the midfield and Collingwood. They get field position and then they were just going to squeeze. They weren't going to allow Essendon to make the ground big. They only went end-to-end once out of 14 rebounds, which they'd been actually pretty good at. And Collingwood just were boa constrictor like and took their chances when they did. And it was a little tactical shift that took the game away out of Essendon's comfort zone. And, you know, Collingwood were able to score enough to be able to win.
So that's the manifestation of excellent tactics, what they lived through last year and what they're adding. So what's that worth to them as they work through the rest of the year? Like, there's no lead that they won't think they can overcome now.
No, absolutely. And I think we've seen this in other sides at times. I think Port Adelaide, back in the day,
probably first year under Ken Hinckley, the never give up era.
Yeah, and it was like, if we're with them at three quarters, we're just going to run all over in the last quarter. And I think there's a bit of placebo in that. Yep. It doesn't need to be. All it needs to be is believed to then be achieved. And once that belief is there, as you've suggested, anything is possible, because it's not about so much. It's nearly a projected outcome that, you know, becomes reality eventually. And even if you don't get there, well, then you've still got to show the capacity and the ability to get it done. And, you know, Collingwood did it consistently last year. They have gears to be able to ratchet it up to another level, and that is moving players in positions. And obviously Nick Dacos is a massive part of that. You know, going into the midfield and taking his skills closer to goal was a big part of yesterday and has been a big part of the momentum shifts. And they did it for 10 minutes without Scott Pendlebury, who is quite often the understated generator of any momentum or shift in a game, whether it's to hold up defensively or be a bit more aggressive in offense.
And the crowd?
Oh, yeah, it was amazing. Just listening to those edits on the way in, on the play-on. There's nothing like an Anzac Day crowd. It's the preliminary final crowds are louder than grand final crowds, and that is because they are largely bipartisan with the teams that are there, rather than spread across 18 clubs, the tickets themselves. My young fellow went, he reckons it felt like there was 80,000 Collingwood supporters, so it was a Collingwood home game. There was just a groundswell of noise and emotion, and I think it was a beautiful day. We forget where we were 3 or 4 years ago. You know, there's an Anzac Day played in front of almost no one, or games played in front of no one. So I think that the Collingwood army, when they get going, is up and about, and it was definitely at full swing. And Essendon that deserves some credit here. I was amazed by the way where they've been able to get to, and there's some real deals here. Like St Kilda and Essendon, the jury's still out. Adelaide, maybe jury's still out. Like, we've got slows on Sydney now. Their numbers still stack up pretty well, but St Kilda and Essendon are right up there in all the key stats.
Yep.
And it doesn't really, you look at personnel, you just think, how are they doing it? It doesn't matter how they're doing it. They're doing it. and they're doing it with really good, solid team play, and they're making the most of what they've got. That's what good teams do.
All right, we're going to do the curiosity being Essendon in a moment. Just so the best bit is Nick Daicos. I feel like this is an all of football conversation. You saw him coming through.
I wish I'd seen more of him coming through.
He's got this beautiful family heritage, which we can all tap into. And I think there's now this fascination as how far can a second-year player take his season? And can he take it all the way to the Brownlow, for instance? And there's discussions going on. Is Tom Morris sort of posed his question and then had a stab at answering it as well after 31 games since World War II?
It's amazing.
John Coleman, 164 goals, a best and fairest in a flag. Tony Modra, 150 goals, all Australian. Ken Hunter, best and fairest in his first year. Nick Daicos, Chris Judd, Peter Matera, Jeff Southby, Alan Jakovich, Nathan Buckley, Tony Lockett. It's good. He is absolutely worthy of his place high up on that list, and it's intoxicating, I think, for all of footy.
Well, we think we know when we're looking at a generational player, someone who comes in and looks like they've been doing it forever. It doesn't happen very often. There's a lot of focus on one fella, and he's handled that focus really well. He's obviously, he carries himself. I think, mums that are sitting at home would hope that their daughters end up spending time with a guy like Nick Daicos, because he's respectful, he's honourable, he's self-effacing. But obviously there's a warrior and a competitor in there, and he's prepared to work, and he's ambitious, and he's connected with his teammates, and he's so skillful and talented. But all of it comes together. I mean, Peter and Colleen should be amazingly proud about where Josh and Nick have got to. Josh did the hard yards. The first father-son pushed into Colleen, had to make his own way, took time, grafted, had to fight that comparisons with his old man. And he's probably forged a path to make it easier for Nick in many ways. But I'm looking at a player that I don't think I've ever seen someone come in and do what he's doing. And there's nothing to suggest that, that anything's going to slow him down in the short term. He will be challenged with injury at certain stages and form, but he hasn't even had a blip in that regard as yet.
And the pondering around tactics against him, but just the way Collingwood uses him, as you rightly point out, not just from contest to contest, but the positional move and then the threat that he is up forward. Like, he is a multi-threat. He's a complete threat in a very rare way.
Yeah, and the way the game is being played currently is perfect for him. He can go left and right. He uses the ball really well. He's got that he's got legitimate short speed, like the first three or four steps to find space. He reads the game so well. He knows where his exits are. There was one bit of play where Scott Pendlebury handballed the ball out to him in the centre square, and 99% of players would have lunged and lost their balance trying to get to the ball before it bounced next. He took a moment, a quarter of a second, with an Essendon player chasing him 3-4 metres away, and he would have known that he would have been, like, it's the middle of the field. There's a bit of pressure around. But he just waited that half second, that half metre, to let the ball bounce again, knowing the way the ball was spinning, that it was going to come up. And it basically, it was like levitating back into his head. So he knew that he didn't have to bend over. He'd be at about this level. The ball would bounce around, likely to come to about a metre. And he was able to hit it at pace after giving a little bit of a goose step to give himself a bit of time. And he was away. So those little things, they just make everything look easy. And I think most people look at it and you don't know why and you don't know how, but it happens.
Yep.
And we see that with the savants, and he is literally a football savant, and he's got it. He's a Mozart. He's brilliant in that respect. And I think trying to analyze it is to do him a disservice. Let's just enjoy the ride.
It's the force.
Yeah, it's a bit of force. It's the vibe.
He's the chosen one. The big issue, no leaders safe from Collingwood. The best bit, Nick Dacos. The curiosity next is Essendon. We're going to debate Richmond. The preliminary final integrity of Melbourne and its forward line with the arrival of Van Rooyen. This is the Anzac edition of the Means Test with Nathan Buckley.
The 666 rule, again, we're on the wrong side of it, but again, I think it's another reason why that rule's so important. I mean, it would have been a lot easier for us to shut the game down if we could have, not had the 666 at centre bounce. But, you know, really, I mean, to Collingwood's credit, the ability just to put steel side bottom, Nick Dacos in the middle late, and for them to step up and, you know, we hung in there, but the last quarter, it was really not even about our defence. It was the fact that we couldn't get our hands on the ball. I mean, we just got, you know, 20 inside 50s to four. Really badly lost the contest at ground level, and you know, we just couldn't get the ball forward or get control of it. So, you know, that's there's progression for us, and to get 28 points in front of a good side like Collingwood's good for us. But you know, as painful it is to say, we will learn a lot from that last quarter.
You don't get the 4 points, but you get the lesson in this one. So the curiosity is Essendon in our Anzac Means Test. How do you balance? So they play Melbourne and Collingwood, 7 excellent quarters and 1 bad quarter. Nathan Buckley, what say you?
I say that they will absolutely learn a lot from that, because I thought they went into their, there's no doubt they went into their shells, and they played the beginning of the last quarter to save the game rather than to win it. Their midfield lacked a little bit of depth, there's no doubt. So Setterfield had to come out of the midfield to cover for Laverde, and that was a significant change to them. And they had Hobbs that was coming in, and he's shown midfield scope. But I think they felt the loss of Zach Merritt more than Collingwood did of Taylor Adams. Collingwood had the luxury of being putting Nick Dacos and steel side bottom into inject them into a midfield to find greater legs. And as I said, Scott Penry missed the last 10 minutes. I think that Essendon, it became an attitudinal battle. And as you said, as much as Collingwood brought that expectation and belief to overwhelm, I think Essendon had to nearly accept the passive role for it all to come together. If they hadn't have, I think they could. All they needed to do was move the ball with a little bit of surety and stabilised by kicking a goal. Jai Menzies had an opportunity there with about sort of 8 or 9 minutes to go to kick one. They did get back in front through Draper.
No, he missed.
Oh, he missed. He didn't. Missed.
That was the chance to get back in front. That was the what if.
Yeah, so the Draper and the Menzies ones, you still need, for a 7 goals to nothing finish, you still needed Essendon to not take their chances for Collingwood to do what they did. So we've got to understand that there's two sides to the coin here. So Essendon played their part in what was an amazing comeback. And yes, there are things that they could have done better and will look at to do better. And I reckon they're going well enough, and Brad Scott has enough of the playing group in terms of belief in what they're doing, that this is an amazing growth opportunity for them.
Nathan Buckley for La Trobe Financial, trusted by Australians. Our Anzac Means Test. One of our categories is they got that right. And Darcy Moore got this speech just so right.
To the veterans, there are over 600,000 veterans in this country who have returned from service. We also extend our thanks to you for your sacrifice. And we hope that, again, doing what we do today somehow honours your legacy and what you've done for our country. So thank you to those 600,000 veterans as well.
You can't memorise that speech. You can't really even have the threads implanted in your mind, I don't think, after the 120 minutes of frenetic football. That has to be in your heart and in your soul.
No, you can, and Darcy can. He's one of the most intelligent people I've ever met in my life, and he's an intelligent young man. If he's representative of the best of the generation that's coming through, well, then we're in good hands. He's gone about it his own way. He's very strong-willed, strong-minded. He's had a strong sense of who he is, and he's been prepared to stand up for that and for others. He's very empathetic. He's interested, not interesting. Like he genuinely cares about the circumstances of others. And when he mentions the veterans, when he mentions not just war, but peacekeeping. Like, to understand that, like, very few care to understand that, that there are actually people that are deployed, not in wars, but just to peacekeep, like, and that that is, a commitment and something that is done for others, for us to enjoy our lives and our liberties. But, and then he went to the families of those. It's not just the men and women that serve or that go away. It's the commitment, the sacrifice that the families make as well. I mean, how much empathy can one person have? And in that circumstance, he nailed it. Like, it was long, but he had everyone from the start to the end, and it was, and in many ways it was succinct and hit the point. So he was, I can't say enough about the bloke, and we're finding, and what I'm grateful for is that everyone is finding out more about him, because he's, you know, people have had their opinions. People have their opinions from the outside in, and sometimes those judgments are made without any information at all. And the more information that slowly comes out, you just be the best version of yourself, continue to work on yourself and be who you are, and eventually people will understand who you are. And I think we're getting to see who Darcy Moore is even more and more from the outside, the people that don't know him, and I think that's a great thing.
He got that right. Our Anzac Means Test with Nathan Buckley. There's a lot of messages pouring through from yesterday's Anzac Day and from Anzac Eve, which we're about to address. The 40 Winks temper text 0433 98 11 16. Temper, a mattress like no other. I might curate all of those and share them at length in the next hour, and we'll take some of your calls as well to get the story from the terraces, the experience that you've had, the 179,000 of us who were at the MCG across a 24-hour period. The means test moves to the Monday night game. The debate will be Richmond's and their trajectory, and PFI will be Melbourne's forward line with Nathan Buckley next. This is Waitley for Host Plus and Hyundai Tucson, tomorrow's SUV in stock now.
Well, at the end of the day, we've been in every game. You know, every game where it's the one thing I will say, our boys are always in the fight. Yeah, we've had some challenges, but so have other sides. We still expect to, you know, won some of those games along the way, but you know, what we sort of deal with now, we feel will keep us in good stead at some stage, whether it's, you know, next week, the week after, 6 weeks down the track, 12 months down the track, we're not too sure. But what we do know is we like a lot of the things we can see. We've got some pieces in the puzzle that we'd like to, you know, put into that. But the matter of fact is at the moment we're getting some experience into some guys in some different positions that will help us, you know, in the longer term.
Richmond is our means test debate for SIFE. Kick financial goals with SIFE. Download the app. You pulled the lever on this a little while ago, Nathan Buckley, that this Richmond side is not about to reprise the glory days of previously. So now that they've got one win from the six rounds and they're in 16th position on the ladder, what do you do with that as the coach?
Well, you do what he's doing, and that is to continue to work at the things in your control, which is the game style, and to keep developing your players to, and then the things that we don't see is setting the club environment up to maximise that growth and that development. So it's getting them fit, it's keeping them happy and healthy, it's coaching them to improve their professional attributes, and it's also supporting them as people, which I think Richmond were probably one of the first clubs to take that leap step to really look at the welfare of their people, both on and off the field. And Brendan Gale's driven that pretty heavily, along with Damien Hardwick. Neil Barmer's a big one on that as well. So I think I respect Richmond as a football club, not just for what they've been able to do on the field, but for what they do off the field. And I don't think they're going to be swayed by, you know, the win-loss of the moment. I think they know they've got a really good coach. Now, whether he's the man to do this rebuild, I think they'll work that out, of whether he's got that hunger to actually regenerate and go again from where they are for the next, you know, to do like a Kevin Sheedy would do for the next journey forward and up. But this year will be finding out about their players, finding out about their people. They've got a really defined game style. When it works, it looks really good. And when it doesn't work, they've still got some young kids that kick the ball away under pressure. And they'll slowly work out whether they can take the next step or whether they need to move on to the next. But I love the way that Richmond go about it. I thought that they would play finals this year, and they still could because their best footy is still pretty good. Rewalt and Cochin have actually looked a lot better in the last 2 or 3 weeks, ironically, given that they've lost those games. But, yeah, I don't mind where they're at, and I think that they're I think their attacking style is good. They're moving the ball really well. Their top six for moving it, you know, to being able to move well. They're defending in, you know, eighth, ball movement eighth. So they're around about. They probably just don't have their bookends at the moment. Are young kids that haven't even played 10 games. Young at one end and Ryan at the other, who are being asked to play, or Miller, who are being asked to play key roles. So the middle of the ground looks okay with the way they set the ground up, with the way they move the ball, with the way they defend. But the pointy ends, they just don't have those, you know, strike targets at the moment. And whether it's Lynch and, you know, missing a, you know, you're missing a key back that really is going to get it done. But, yeah, they'll find those in time, and they're building their game again whilst they're in this process.
What do you reckon they're building for now? Are they building for next year? Are they a couple of years down the track? Is it that their golden generation isn't going to get another flag? I think that's the evidence for them right now, is Cochin and Revolt will retire at the end of this year.
Yeah.
Martin's still got a little bit to go. So I think they came into the season at sort of that, we're a puncher's chance.
Yeah.
Let's sort of that luck tester. Let's see where we are. And now they're, turns out they've had no luck and they're 16th. Okay. So we're not winning it this year, which is not to discount this year. We're not winning it next. So when are we, how sharp are those conversations of trying to work out? Okay. So we've been in the draft for the past few years. When are we planning to return to the top?
Well, there's no doubt that they spent some bickies to get Taranto and Hopper in, and there may be part of that may be about, you know, 4 or 5 years and a regeneration. Part of it might have been about, you know, before some of our veterans tip out, the best of what we've got might actually be enough to get us around the mark, given that they played finals and should have really won that first final last year. So they're probably hedging their bets with that. The outside, now that it hasn't gone well, you're going, okay, well, have you sold Peter to pay Paul type thing? But I think that, you know, Taranto played really well. He looked a lot better with Jaden Short in the side, you know, yeah, delivering the football out of the back half. And Taranto was actually the bloke that got on the end of a lot of his kicks through the midfield. So I think he'll enjoy having the distributor behind him with a little bit more class in Short. And Hopper has actually, he looked like he played pretty well on the weekend as well. He sort of, and they're settling into a new team, into a new club, into a new environment, into a new city. I think they'll still be good recruits for them. We always look at the short term. You know, do they have to win, you know, 4 games in the next 8? I don't know, 4 games in the next 6? Do they have to play finals? Do they have to be, you know, contending for flag this year? There's only going to be one winner. I don't think Richmond have got the capacity to be in the premiership window this year. They've had too many injuries, too many things go against them, and the second half of their list, the bottom half of their list, is just too young and inexperienced. So it's a development year. It always has been. And if we change our expectations, yeah, I think Richmond, the game looks okay. They're just not winning at the moment.
Richmond, our debate on the ANZAC means tests, PFI, preliminary final integrity. This is our category where we cast an eye. What's it going to look like on preliminary final night for a team? So Melbourne, the arrival of Van Rooyen in that last quarter, classic coaching sliding doors moment, about to be subbed out. And then he has his moment, which might be the bedrock of his career. What will Melbourne's forward line look like come preliminary final night? Is Simon Goodwin, he's got a mix to juggle.
It's competitive, and that's a good thing to be in. You know, we haven't had a lot of continuity with our tools. You know, Gorney's missed footy, Jake Lever's missed footy, Stephen May, Ben Brown, they've all missed footy. So this has given us an opportunity to look at things. And it hasn't affected our scoring. You know, I think we're second in the comp for scoring. So we're going to keep forging ahead and trying some things. And all those guys will get their opportunities if they're in form. But, you know, we like what we're seeing with Jacob, and we like what we're seeing with Harrison Ford. So
how many tools do you want to play in that forward 50?
Ideally, we like to play 3. You know, we've got obviously the 2 ruckmen and 2 key forwards, and okay. You know, that seems to be the best mix that's worked for us over the last few years.
So on the outside looking in, Brown, McDonald and Melksham at the moment. Van Rooyen plays with Petty Fritches up forward. Gorn went forward rather than back on Monday night more often. What do you, if we did a bit of forecasting on PFI, what will Melbourne's best forward setup look like, Bucks?
We don't always have to have the answers now. And even Simon Goodwin and the coaching staff's best idea of what their best, you know, six or seven looks like in that front third, that'll change and evolves as you go along. I mean, as you've just detailed and he spoke about last night with Van Rooyen, you know, moments away from being subbed out, but he has what potentially could have been a career-changing, you know, 10 or 15 minutes to give him the belief to go forward. And just quietly, how good's the kid's attitude? Like, we did an interview with him after the game and he was brilliant. Like, it's just that that youthful innocence and exuberance and wide-eyed, and like, it's going to be fascinating to watch him go about his business, but he seems like he's got a bit to work with, hasn't he? I think, is Bailey Fritcher a tall? Is he considered a tall in that conversation, do you think?
No, probably not. Like, he'll be the fourth. If they're playing three talls, he would be a fourth, wouldn't he?
Yeah. Well, they don't have them at the moment, do they? They don't have them there at the moment. So, yeah, if you're looking at that, they've only played with two talls in the resting Ruckman and Van Rooyen. But, yeah, look, and even their smalls, like Neil Bullen, Chandler, Spargo probably comes back. Yeah, Sparrow's obviously played a little bit more through the midfield, but he can play forward as well. Look, their mix is interesting. They're moving the ball. They're actually struggling to move the ball. They're defending really well. They're the best ball use, sort of best your team defence at the moment at preventing sides from going end to end. Their own end to end use at the moment is sort of in the bottom half of the comp. So there's still some improvement in that. I think it comes off the back of their intercept game, which is not quite at its premium. Stephen May's had a couple of really quiet weeks, and he's not on song. But yeah, you know, and when one of your best players is playing at, you know, 6 out of 10, 5 or 6 out of 10, it has a considerable impact on the rest of your game. So I still think they've got so much upside. They hit the ground running in this season, and they sort of just flattened out a little bit.
Yep.
But they did enough to win on the weekend. Essendon last week, they looked lethargic. They just weren't able to impose their game style, but they should feel like they're in good shape because they're learning as they're going through this little patch.
Every means test finishes with seeding, so you just have to have a think. We did 3 through 6 on Monday, so you've just got to do 1 and 2 in order. Collingwood or Melbourne? Melbourne or Collingwood? My favourite part of that interview, yes, is it did sound like Simon Goodwin said Harrison Ford. He said Harrison Ford, but it sounded like Harrison Ford, which I think Harrison Petty would take.
So are you saying that Collingwood and Melbourne are the clear top two in that?
Well, you can have whatever seedings you like. Yes. But that is my thesis. The two teams we saw win in the past 48 hours are the two teams.
Don't know if I like those postulates.
You can have 1 and 2, whatever way you like. Nathan Buckley for La Trobe Financial, looking out for you, for your finance for more than 70 years.
Waitley on SEN.
Every means test finishes with seedings for tyre power, tipping winners on tyre safety all season. There really are no rules when it comes to the seedings. You can do whatever you like, so don't let me constrict you. But I do need a 1 seed and a 2 seed, Nathan Buckley, to finish.
Yeah, Collingwood a 1, and you know, maybe Melbourne a 2 out of the 2 that you give me. So there you go. No, I just think that the Collingwood game is in great shape. It's the ball use, the ball winning, with contested ball and clearance was a question mark late last year, and yeah, that's been really been cleaned up. Tom Mitchell's been fantastic in there, and fitted into the system really well. I don't think Melbourne are the second seeded side at the moment. St Kilda got bona fides for that, the way that they're performing, and the shape of how they set the ground up.
I've got Collingwood 1 and Melbourne 2, and my 3 to 6 from Monday was St Kilda, Brisbane, Geelong, and the Bulldogs. But yeah, Collingwood have won the right to the 1 seed for the time being.
Yeah, and Adelaide can't be far away from that. It was Hawthorn. It was only Hawthorn, but geez, that game was riveting to watch as well. It's in great shape, isn't it? The comp.
It is.
The next 6 weeks are going to be fascinating.
It settles into a rhythm after Anzac Day, so we've sort of had that frenzy to start, and it has set the season up on a great course. Bucks, thank you.
Thanks, Jude.
Nathan Buckley with the Anzac Means Test. You can have your say now.